the perceptions, the another cool, bright morning. We can say today is Saturday. Here we are in Northern California, Sonoma County, up on this hillside. We can say this is the last full day of the retreat. Is this ordinary or something very special? What does the mind do with this moment, these perceptions? Does the mind say, hooray, it's nearly over? Or, oh no, it's nearly over? Or some kind of interesting combination of, hooray, oh no! Oh nay, hurro! Yesterday Ajahn Taniya taught me that hooray means goodbye in Kiwi. Someone's going to come and say hooray. I say, they're going to come and say hooray? In New Zealand, hooray means goodbye. To say hooray means hooray, I'm off. Not hooray, something wonderful just happened. So what just happened? Is it hooray, I'm glad it's all over, or hooray, goodbye? This is the world of perception, isn't it? We're gathered together, we've been this unified whole, this unified body, this spirit, all of us together comprising this entity, the Thanksgiving Retreat, 2006, 2550. We can contemplate the realm of perception. How does it feel? What does it teach us? How does the heart adapt to these perceptions? How does it become entangled and pulled this way and that? So this time together, these are some of the things that, some of the themes we've been exploring, looking at, feeling out. The perception of the last full day, tomorrow, the other world due to begin again. No longer being blob number 8, row 3, we get an identity back. Our role in our work, our family, our hometown, putting on the mask again. But we can reflect, it's not just a matter of resenting masks or longing for masks, but being able to pick them up and put them down. Speak through them, let the heart function through the different personae that we embody in the course of a day. This is the adaptability of the heart. Reflecting on what the mind does with perceptions. Eager for it to be over, looking forward to a re-entry to the other world, engaging with the other world. dreading, or mixtures of both. But either way, whatever the mixture might be, we can know that. The heart can attune to that. And this is the key point, isn't it? This is where right view is established. Does the heart create suffering out of this or not? Is there clinging or not? And if there's clinging, can the heart let go? And if there's a letting go, can we realize the peace, the freedom that is revealed in that? With the ending of dukkha, the ending of tension, the righting of the wheel. Can we feel that freedom, the freely spinning wheel? The heart fully knowing the universe is in order, even with things that we wouldn't choose or like, physical ailments, troubled family members, pressures at work. The ending of suffering doesn't mean a comfortable body and a hassle-free family. The ending of suffering is realizing that everything belongs. Healthy bodies, sick bodies. Happy families, fragmented families. It all belongs. That realization is what helps the heart to be in accord. The recognition that everything belongs to nature. The universe can't be out of order. The Dhamma cannot be out of order. So as the day proceeds and the hours unfold, we can reflect on what the mind creates from that. Thoughts of excitement. What I'm going to have for supper. I'm going to eat. What will I eat? I'm going to have dinner. Yes! Caution to the wind. Renunciation be damned. I'm going to eat in the evening. Yeah. So we can reflect on that. I'm, of course I'm not, but poetic license. I'm going to have supper. Or tomorrow I'm due to fly to England, and then after a gathering together with Ajahn Sumedho and a few others, off to Egypt. Ooh. Ooh, I'm going to Egypt. That's even better than supper. Pyramids, Luxor, the Nile. Then you can reflect on the feeling, I wish I was going to Egypt. All I get is supper. Some people have all the luck. Listening to the mind. Listening to what the mind creates. I want more, I want less. I want it to go on forever. I want it to be over now. It's never the content of what the mind is saying, it's just how much the heart believes it that causes the trouble. So we listen. Being the one who listens to the sounds of the world, I want more. I want it all. I want less. As the mind creates different thoughts and patterns, feelings, we can take this moment to listen. I want it to go on. I want it to be over. I don't know what I want. I just want. I don't want anything. Listening. Truly attending to what the heart creates. Sometimes the thought patterns are bizarre, weird, meaningless strings of words. We can't even figure out where they came from. Years ago in Thailand, I was telling people yesterday, during one morning sitting, this phrase appeared in my mind. If you've got to be a tramp, be a flobbly one. But what? What the hell does that mean? And who thought that anyway? You know, who knows where all this stuff comes from? Maybe it is the person behind you. You're just overhearing their thoughts. Just to listen. Powerful urges, gentle murmurings, sweet insights. Gnawing sadnesses. We listen. And that heart of listening is infinitely peaceful. Peace is in the attitude towards the heard. So there's a leaving things alone, attending, responding, but not owning. Listening to the thoughts. Sometimes it can help just to spell them out. Just to clarify what's there. It can help us not to believe in it. Just to spell it out. Even the unthinkable ones, the profane ones, or the illegal ones, as well as the noble and reasonable ones, just to spell them out. I want to kill my roommate. Why does he do that thing with his shoes? He knows it annoys me. I want to murder him. He's doing it on purpose. Again. We know it's crazy and we'd never act on it, but just to spell it out. I wish I was somebody else. If only I wasn't me, then I would be happy. When we spell it out, sometimes we can feel a true compassion for the place where that thought came from. And in the same breath, we're released from believing it, being oppressed by that, agitated by that, compelled by that. As we hear it, know it, it's released. And then spelling it out, listening to it, knowing it, we touch that intuition that realizes, oh, it's just a thought. Because of a body, a mind, thoughts arise, feelings arise, longings, fears, urges. That's all. It's just the flavor of the world. As we listen, this helps the heart just to rest in this moment. No matter how vivid the creations of a future or a past, time, as we listen, it helps the heart to rest in this moment, in real time. Lumbo Cha used to say, a religious seeker has no future. One who practices the Dhamma has no future. Doesn't mean to say we never act or make decisions. But there's a clear knowledge. The idea of the future is an idea. And the attention rests with a responsivity to this moment, this time, this place, this situation. Taking refuge in Dhamma is so much to do with allowing the heart to rest in this moment, to be fully attuned to this moment, not creating a future, a past. The Buddha called this the ideal solitude. Perfect solitude of the here and now. And particularly today, with preparations, cleaning up, plans for traveling, all the things that need to be drawn together, perceptual signals about actually leaving, changes of schedule, timetables, buses and planes. All the signals are vivid. It's there on the schedule, Saturday. So the clues and the pressure is towards becoming. Getting on to the next thing. The current is strong. Therefore the need to lean against the current, or the capacity to lean against the current, is also strong. To taste that flavor of becoming, feel the pressure of becoming, and like leaning against the pressure of a stream in the middle of a river, leaning back against the pressure of the current, allowing it to hold the body up. You can lean back on that pressure of becoming. Constantly referring, reminding the heart that it's just this moment. Despite all the signals, a samana, one who practices the Dhamma, has no future. We really don't know what will happen next. We don't know. The voices of reason jump in and say, yeah, but I've got a plane to catch, people to meet, jobs to do. This happens at 8 o'clock, this happens at 9 o'clock, this happens at 10:30, this happens at 12 o'clock, this happens at 1 o'clock. It's there on the piece of paper. As T.S. Eliot said, men and bits of paper blown by the cold wind that blows before and after time. Bits of paper. So what? California might drop into the ocean before then. We return to this moment, this reality. Not to never act in accordance with time or a schedule, but allowing the heart the peace of not becoming. Not caught in the current of becoming. So action happens. Choices happen. But just like with a walking meditation, that which knows the walking isn't walking. That which knows your body right now isn't sitting. The quality of knowing is unlocated, has nothing to do with time or space, or with individuality. So letting go of becoming is letting go into that spacious knowing, being that space which is aware of movement happening, perceptions changing, schedules reaching their end, changing, aware of masks being picked up and put on, spoken through, put down again. Bhava Nirodha, cessation of becoming. It's allowing the heart to know that the true, genuine, vast peacefulness of that, not becoming. And not switching off either, not annihilating or tilting towards vibhava tanha, switching off, shutting down, locking out. Being that space through which the current flows. How peaceful that is. So through the day, setting this intention to listen to the voices, feel the urges in the body. Gotta get stuff done. Got things to do, stuff to prepare. Plan. Got a plan, capital P. I should make a list. That's it. I need to make a list. Feeling that current, the urge to do, to get, to be. Feeling it, knowing it. Letting the changes happen, but without the heart entangled, confused, bowled over, bashed against the rocks. Just being that space through which the current of changes flows. Letting the changes of the day, night, tomorrow, letting them form, crystallize and dissolve. The morning I was setting off on a 800-mile walk through England, more than 20 years ago, Ajahn Sumedho said, actually, there's nobody going anywhere. There are just conditions of mind that are changing. But I've got my plans. We're setting off today. Yes, the bodies move, but actually there's nobody going anywhere. There's just conditions of mind changing. And giving ourselves permission to feel that, to know that. This is the great kindness. Allowing the heart not to pursue, not to contend, even with the unwanted, the bitter and the difficult, the unfair. What do you mean you've cancelled my plane? I'm going to England. You can't cancel my plane. I've got plans. Capital P. One of our friends was leaving Dharamsala in India, and he went to the airport down in the valley. Arrived a couple of hours before his flight, got to the desk, the officer said, "Derby, sorry sir, your plane has already left." "So no, I'm on the 3 o'clock flight. It's 1 o'clock." "Yes sir, your plane has already departed. It has gone to Delhi." No, "I'm on the 3 o'clock flight." "This is 3 o'clock. It's only 1 o'clock. It's today's flight, 3 o'clock, see, here? Look, it says on my ticket." "Yes, sir. Your plane has gone already. It has departed for Delhi." But it's only 1 o'clock." "Yes, sir. Your flight was preponed." Preponed? What does prepone mean? "Preponed, sir. It is the opposite of postponed. Your flight has gone already, sir." Life is full of surprises. So what will the day bring? What do you mean Paul's gone to the football game and there's no lunch? You can listen to the mind saying, "He doesn't really mean it. I saw Paul down there." "Does he really mean it?" We don't know. Or letting the heart just rest in that state of not pursuing, not contending. This is a great kindness to ourselves, isn't it? Allowing ourselves to be at peace. Enjoying the peace that's here. That's always here. And not just here at the Angelus Center. The real Angelus Center is your Angelus Center. Your angelic center. It's always here. even when we have good reason to complain. It's up to us whether we create suffering here and now. The chant that we do of the four Brahma Viharas, Mitta Sahagatena, I will abide, pervading one quarter. This chant is a passage that comes at the end of a discourse of the Buddha called the Simile of the Saw. The Simile of the Saw is that Buddha says, if you were kidnapped by bandits, they were cutting your arms and legs off with a two-handled saw. One who gave rise to the thought of aversion towards them who are doing that to you on account of that would not be practicing my teaching. That's setting the bar pretty high. But it's deliberately extreme. You think, I've got good reason to complain. Good reason to get upset. People cutting my arms and legs off. It's quite understandable to feel a little peeved. I say, do you chaps have to do that? But the Buddha clearly states, to give rise to a thought of aversion on account of that is not to be practicing my teaching. Even in an ultra-extreme situation like that, where you're being totally mistreated and abused, murdered, painfully, to create hatred on account of that is for the heart to be out of accord with Dhamma. And he says, rather one should think, may they be at ease, may they be happy, may they abide pervading one quarter with a heart imbued with loving kindness, so that teaching comes. So the Buddha makes it deliberately extreme, almost absurd. To point out that buying into aversion, buying into contention, is always to be out of accord with Dhamma. We can't necessarily like what's happening, but we cannot contend against it without any hypocrisy, without shutting down. We're aware of it, we know it. We create no contention against it. Instead, the heart moves to kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, equanimity. So that when it's just minor fluctuations within us, or intense fluctuations over minor matters, somebody cuts us off on the freeway, somebody moves your cushion, somebody's moved my cushion. Who did that? She's taken my seat. I always sit there. She knows. You can feel homicidal thoughts about somebody sitting on a bench. It's because the eye and the mind creates my place. This is my pond. What are these people doing here making noise? I've come here to meditate. Who do these people think they are? They're probably the ones that own the pond. The mind moves with justifiable aversion, reasonable upset. What do you mean, preponed? The Buddha points out, even if they're cutting your arms and legs off, hatred is always out of accord with Dhamma. Has to be. A famous story of a great master Xu Yun was the age of 114. He was attacked by the Red Guard. Chaitanya was talking about how he would restore all these monasteries and they would get broken up and destroyed. He was so influential and so loved and powerful in China that the time of of the communist revolution, the Red Guard came and beat him up. He was 114 years old, and he was beaten with wooden clubs and left him for dead, kind of broken and bleeding. But he survived, he didn't die, and his fellow monastics took care of him, looked after him. They were amazed at his strength and his resilience, and that he recovered. Some weeks later, then the Red Guard found out he was still alive, so they went back and they beat him up again with steel bars. Broke his bones and bust his head, and incredibly injured. And everyone was sure he was going to die. And he was terribly hurt, incredible pain. And even his disciples, who loved him dearly, thought that even though he's been so injured, so hurt, the great master isn't dying. It must be out of compassion for us that he's holding on, because he knows how upset we'll be if he passes away. So they said to him, "Please, Shufu, don't just hang on to life. Your bones are all broken and your organs are smashed and you're in such terrible pain. Please don't hang on to life just because you think that we'll be upset if you pass away. If it's time for you to die, then please don't hang on to life just for our sake." He said, "It's not for you. I am deliberately holding on and staying alive, but it's not for you. It's for the soldiers who beat me. Because if I died, the karma that they would create would be so terrible, I couldn't be responsible for that. So I'm staying alive, but it's for their sake, not for you." And he lived another 6 years after that. Wisely, the communist army left him alone. He lived till 1959. So such great compassion, great kindness is possible. We take an example like that, and then when we're getting into a thunderous rage because somebody cuts us off on the freeway or somebody moves your cushion, then we can look at that example, feel that example, and say, well, where's the mind going? How is the heart moving? Reflects it back. Comes back to us. And we can let go. We can come back to that space of openness. Ready to be with the disliked. To be with the liked. The wanted. The unwanted. The loved and the feared. Resting in that spacious attending, listening openness, hearing the surges, feeling the surges of the heart, longing, fearing, resenting, hoping, creating, feeling it, knowing it, unconfused by it. This is the great blessing. This is the great beauty that we can carry with us. Regardless of how much the world changes, it can stay with us.